well, I can see I'm going to have a good crowd to preach because you're responding right back. And I love that. It makes me feel like I am at home. So this is awesome. Today, I'm going to talk about when dreams take flight. For those of you who were here yesterday, I talked about my newest book release. And for those of you who are not, I just want to quickly tell you, I have a brand new book called Motivated by the Impossible, Recognizing Your Invisible Mentors. And it became a bestseller this summer. It came out in April 5th of this year. And because of all of the 22 years of experience in my life, people assume that everything was just amazing, that I'm just strolling through the country and the world preaching without any problems. So the previous four books that I have written were full of just the miraculous stories of God performing really miracles of coming out of communism, coming here, providing for me. And what I did is I really wanted to inspire people and encourage them in understanding that God is able to do above and beyond what we ask or imagine. But people also assume that I just prayed one prayer and then the next day it got answered and I had no problems. So that is why I thought I'm going to write the journey of what happens when you pray and nothing takes place for years. And then you pray some more and it gets worse. And then you pray some more and you feel like you're backtracking rather than making steps forward. So this way, nobody has to be jealous of my life. All you got to do is read the book and realize you don't want my life. Really, you don't. And if you do, then more power to you. You know, join my team. But I just thought 22 years into it, I want to write the principles that I have learned from the trials and the experiences that life throws at you just by waking up, getting a phone call, and all of a sudden everything just takes place without you even wanting to take place. And how do you go through life overcoming those problems and challenges and not feeling like you're losing the battle? That even when you feel like you're fighting and you're in the middle of those problems, that you can have a sustained faith, that you don't lose your focus, that you don't become bitter, angry, resentful, but you become more full of faith and compassion, authenticity, and resilience. And so all of those principles are in the book. And I said even yesterday, if I die tomorrow, I'm happy. This is the last thing I wrote because I literally poured all that I had in it. So if you're only getting one thing from the book table, please just get that. And we're doing a special. You can buy one book and get the second one half off. So if those are available, you can give them for somebody for Christmas. Now, today, since we're talking about anniversary, and I love what Pastor Steve was talking about, the whole story. Thank you so much for sharing that, because I didn't know everything either. The journey, that we're all on a journey. Nothing happens overnight. And in the middle of that journey, God's faithfulness continues to be revealed to us. He gives us a revelation, and it's a progressive revelation. We continuously begin to discover and to understand that the plan that God has for us in the very beginning of us knowing what He's telling us is going to unfold so much bigger and better than what we have actually even thought in the very beginning. And this is exactly what's happening here. I believe that you guys at age 11 as a church are still in the beginning of the great and mighty exploits that you're going to see transpire through this church and the congregation here. That as you continue to grow, as you continue to stand together by faith and in unity, that you reach not just this area, the city, the state, but you're continuing to reach the world. And you're going to see an explosion. You're going to have to move all these walls out and expand in this direction or whatever the land is. I think it was in this direction. And see the growth of all of those seeds that you have planted over the years. They are coming up. So this is definitely a time of celebration because what you have sown, you're definitely going to reap. And this is your due season. This is not the time to say, wow, it's getting worse in America, when I can tell you it is not. You should go to another country like Syria or Afghanistan, and then you're going to come back very, very happy. Even come and see us in Bulgaria, and you're going to come back and be like, I love Louisiana. With all of our problems here, this level of corruption is nothing in comparison to some other countries. But all that to say, when we carry that spirit of gratitude, when we carry that vision inside of us, God is able to work on the inside of us and continue to expand those seeds and continue to water them in our life so that we can see them come to pass. A few years ago, when I was a child, my dad, in those days under communism, you couldn't just go and buy a car. So he had to put down a certain amount of money, and they gave him a ticket, and they said, according to your last name, the first letter of your last name, after many years, you can come, and when your name is drawn, you can pick up your car. So under communism, everything was dictated and very restricted. Basically, for 10 years, he waited with this tiny little ticket and a number on it to receive his car one day. So he had to put down all of his life savings. And at that time, I was about 6 years old when my dad decided he's going to get his dream car, which was a red Russian Lada. I mean, all of the import, after all, came from Russia because we're under communism with them. And so every day he would pull out that little ticket. I mean, it was like the golden ticket. It was made out of little paper with a little scratch writing on it that you look at it and you're thinking, are they for real? Is anybody really going to call you, or did they just steal your money and then you're never going to see that car ever in your life? But I remember my dad every so often, and sometimes almost on daily occasions, would pull out that little ticket and be like, Stacy, one day we're going to get the car. We're going to go to the beach at the Black Sea, and we're going to enjoy our time there, and we're going to drive all the way there and all the way back, which was about 5-6 hours away. And he would tell me all these different things we were going to do once we have a car, because usually in those days in Europe, you didn't have private vehicles. Everything was bus transportation and a lot of walking. So you had a really good heartbeat and heart rate because you had to walk long distances carrying all kinds of stuff. And so I would sit there with him and we would just dream all the time of how we're going to get the car. Well, one day the phone rang, and guess what? It was the news 10 years later. 10 years later, let's just clarify, the phone rang, and all of a sudden I hear my dad jumping and screaming and saying to my mom, we gotta go pick up our red Lada. Our name has been drawn. Well, what happens is, if you don't have the rest of the money to pay for the vehicle, your name is put back on the list, and then you wait another 10 to 20 years. So aren't you happy you can go and get a car anytime you want? And you can even get a loan, and then you can just pay the loan later? Okay, well, at that time, my dad gives the rest of his savings. With both of my parents were very sacrificial people. And so they go get the car. And now the entire neighborhood is at our house waiting for the Red Wonder to arrive into our area. And then we hear my dad pulling around the corner, and he's coming. All of our relatives are there. All of the neighbors are there. It doesn't look like we're having a big celebration, because if you have ever watched the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding, that is exactly how things roll in Bulgaria. You wave your hand and the whole family shows up to give you their opinion. And so this is our entire neighborhood. They're like, wow, are you going to give us now rides in the car? I mean, everybody is so excited. We finally get our Red Wonder. It reminded me, as I was writing this in the book and also as I was preparing, about the time when God spoke to Abraham. And in Genesis chapter 15, verse 5. And I think they're going to put that scripture up. The Lord speaks to Abraham, and at that time his name was Abram, who didn't have any children. His wife was barren. They were already like 90 years old. And God says to him, hey, I need you to go outside, and I need you to look up into the sky, and I need you to look at the stars, and I want you to count all of the stars, as many as you're able to number. And he said to him, and that's how many descendants you're going to have. Isn't it amazing that first Abram, before his name was changed, he receives the word. He has to do something outside of his comfort zone. First, he has to go out. Then he has to look up. Then he has to count. And then he has to act. Usually, when we get a dream, we think that it's just going to supernaturally, boom, happen the next day. And we read all the books. We get all the laying on of hands as we can possibly get, thinking that it's all going to depend on God. Well, this was a covenant that God was establishing between us as humans, or the Abrahamic covenant, and himself, to say, I am going to make you a great nation. All of those descendants that you're going to have, they are going to be blessed because you are going to be a blessing. And out of the obedience, and I would say in the middle of it, disobedience of Abraham, we get to reap all of the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because Abraham looked and he started to count, and he was so overwhelmed because God expanded his vision, but Abraham's natural comfort zone didn't get expanded automatically. So he had to walk the journey out. And what he did is he goes and he shares with his wife, and they come up with the greatest idea of how he is going to just have a child from his maid. And he gets one. It's called Ishmael. Because whatever we produce on our own, we have to feed for the rest of our life. So that's why until this day, we have Middle Eastern problems. Thank you, Abraham. So that's how that whole thing began. And then he gets actually Isaac, but there is a big, long walk between being the father of many nations and just being a father of a child. What I'm here to tell you today is, you may be sitting here with all kinds of dreams and all kinds of visions inside of you. First of all, go out of your current comfort zone and start learning more about the things that God has placed in your heart to do. Don't just assume you're going to have the supernatural download every single day from heaven. You're going to have to read. You're going to have to work your dream. You're going to have to get up. You're going to have to do something. Because dreams take time and they take work. The second thing is, a dream that comes from God is always others focused. A dream that comes from us is always us focused, of how we're going to be better and how we're going to make ourselves great. That's why Abraham was called the father of many nations, because this wasn't supposed to be about him. And yet he created it with Sarah about them having a child. That's why Ishmael was not the right child. Now, the next thing that takes place is, when we have a dream, we're going to have a testing of our dream. And that testing is going to be the testing through unfairness and darkness. So I'm going to take you a few chapters after Genesis 15. And we're going to look at the life of Joseph. Genesis 37 through 50. We're not going to read the whole thing. But we're going to look at the part where Joseph, the youngest out of his brothers, is Jacob's favorite son. And he is given a coat of many colors, and he is told, you are Jacob's favorite child. Now, not only is he his favorite, but also he has a dream while he's 17. And in the dream, he sees himself ruling over all of his brothers and dictating to them. And his father was also there. And he gets up and goes and shares with people who absolutely hated him the rest of the dream. So within 24 hours, I mean, I don't know how long exactly, but it just looks like it was the next verse over. The moment he shares that dream, he goes from being somebody's favorite to being nobody's favorite. He is taken out and he is sold into slavery to a stranger that is walking on the street. So human trafficking did exist way back in the day, if you really look at it, because Joseph was one of them that was sold. Not only was he sold, but the coat that identified him was also ripped apart, dipped in animal's blood, brought back to his father, and his father actually was made aware through a lie by his brothers that Joseph is now dead. So the father goes through this long period of mourning while Joseph goes through the period of mourning in prison, being falsely accused for the next 13 years. So he has a dream that he is going to be this amazing person one day, and yet his life goes from amazing to bad to worse to the point that he doesn't even think this is ever going to stop. So it says in Genesis 39:23 that every single time the Joseph had this inkling like, oh my goodness, how long is this going to last? That God spoke to him and reassured him, the Lord is with him, and everything that he did, he made it prosper. He gave him favor. So even in the darkest moments of the unfairness of the forgotten times in your life, it's going to test your willingness to forgive. And if you're willing to forgive, the Lord will continue to build the supernatural favor and weave his supernatural coat of many colors over your life so that you're not carrying a coat that was just passed on by a family member, by somebody else that said that they just love you so much, or the boss that gave you a raise. But it's now the favor of God that nobody can remove from you because you earned it from a revelation of walking through the darkest seasons of life and saying, but the Lord will deliver me. But the Lord is still with me. But the Lord is going to provide. But the Lord, he is going to be my healer. But the Lord. That is how we build our heavenly coat of many colors. So don't get discouraged today if you're saying, I've lost everything. I don't have anything. Well, guess what? I've been in your shoes many times. And I counted as my invisible mentors. And just like Joseph did, he counted that as an invisible mentor. Because just as he was sold into slavery, in one instant, he also had another dream and another interpretation. And he interpreted the dream of Pharaoh. And he became the next prime minister, the right-hand person in a land that was foreign for him. And now his brothers had to come and look for water and look for food. They didn't even recognize him. And there is a verse right there, Genesis 50 verse 20. On the second time that the brothers came back, he decided, I'm going to reveal myself to them, because he recognized them, but they didn't. And I love what the verse says. Joseph looked at them and he says, you intended to harm me. But God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. Can you imagine if you decide walking through this life, instead of gaining a grudge, bitterness, unforgiveness towards everybody else while you're in the season of that testing, that you say, this is my invisible mentor and I'm going to learn to forgive like nobody's business. People are going to come and they're going to hurt you. And I am telling you the truth. They're going to come and you're going to have battles. this life is not battle exempt and it's not problem exempt. I grew up in a country where you're surrounded by enormous amount of problems just by getting up and walking on the street. You can't just go buy food the way you buy it here. You can't just go down the road and apply for documents or start the business. You have so many restrictions as a Christian. You have so many levels of persecution, so many levels of mafia dealings, that every single moment of the day, you're thinking, thank God somebody else lived this journey ahead of me so I can read it in the Bible and be encouraged myself that if they made it and they suffered, but they persevered, their character was built, and therefore I don't have to give up. That is how a dream is built. A dream has to be so alive inside of you from the spoken word that God has said this to me, I'm not giving up. It doesn't matter if everything else is falling apart, I am not going to also produce my own Ishmael either. For you to decide that you're going to have to wait at the right timing for things to be fulfilled rather than jumping ahead of God and saying, well, I can't wait anymore. Now I'm so old. I did all of this. No, there is a right timing. And at the right timing, all things begin to come and to unfold. And I'll give you a few examples here in just a minute, but I want to lay this foundation. You never know why certain things have happened in your life, the good and the bad and the ugly, until you look back in life and you begin to connect the dots. And you can begin to stand in front of your own enemies, and sometimes they're all in your head. It's not even a visible person. It's all the lies and all the things that Satan tries to come and battle you with. That you can stand and say, you know what? Satan, you try to destroy me, but I'm going to be just like Joseph, and I'm going to say, yes, you intended to harm me, but God is now using it for the good of the saving of many souls. That is what a dream brings forth. It brings forth purpose and the saving of many souls. The next thing that takes place here is you're going to have a test of your patience and perseverance. How many of you woke up this morning praying for patience and perseverance? None of us. Okay, well, I guess a couple of people. So that's very good, but most of us are not going to get up and say, oh, Lord, I just want to be more patient. Give me more struggles. Give me more stuff that I don't, you know, I just want to learn how to persevere through them. No, we usually pray, Lord, deliver me as soon as possible, right? Romans 5, verse 3 to 5 says, not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. And hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. With other words, I love this definition. When we hold out for the good, our perseverance is expressed as patience. When we hold on to the good, our perseverance is expressed as endurance. Endurance holds on to the good. Perseverance finds the good in the worst of circumstances. This was written in Stand Against the Wind by Erwin McManus, who is a pastor in Los Angeles. And when you read these verses, especially in Romans, you want to avoid anything that has to do with the word suffering, don't you? Because in America, we're told that suffering is not of God. But if you read the New Testament and what the disciples had to go through, I don't find any one of them that was exempt of suffering, beatings, persecution. As a matter of fact, the more persecuted they were, the more on fire for God they were, and the more the church grew, and all these thousands of people were coming to the church. So persecution and suffering is not a bad thing if you look at it as your invisible mentor, because it is going to take place. But in the middle of it here, it says it produces hope. How did the word hope get stuck in the middle of suffering, perseverance, character, and then hope. Because hope does not put us to shame, the following verse says, because it's been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who was given to us. With other words, every single circumstance you face in life, you're not facing it alone. You're facing it with the one who is the giver of hope. You're facing it with Christ Himself, the hope of glory, who says, I am residing inside of you, and everywhere you go, you can be a hope dispenser in the middle of doom and gloom. Everywhere you go, instead of saying, oh my gosh, I am suffering, you're saying, wow, in the middle of my suffering, I am so full of hope, for the one who delivers me is going with me in the middle of all of these impossibilities. That is how character is being built and perseverance is being built, based on the word hope that is a key word in that whole verse. So don't fret. Don't get all mad thinking God has forgotten me. No, He hasn't. He's actually saying, good job. Keep on going forward. Even though the road may be narrow, I am with you on that road. Don't stop, because I am building your hope inside of you, and your coat of many colors is about to be seen in front of everyone else who rejected you, who stabbed you, who said you're no good for anything, and you're rising up and saying, wow, though you may have harmed me or tried to harm me, now this is for the salvation of many. Your story is for the salvation of many more souls. So watch what's coming out of your mouth while you're in the middle of perseverance, while you're in the middle of sufferings, whatever those may be in your life. Because people are watching what we're speaking. They're watching to see, are they still grateful? Are they still forgiving? Are they still willing to go through this? Which takes us to the next point, is the test of seeing God's promises established in our life. So we go from darkness, unfairness, to perseverance and persistence and prayer and establishment of our character, to seeing God's promises established in our life. God's promise to Abraham was established before he even dreamed or thought that he was going to be a father of many nations. But God saw the heart of Abraham. He also saw his failures. He also saw his inabilities that he and Sarah had. And he still trusted them in the middle of their humanity. He trusted them to fulfill a covenant that only God Himself could actually fulfill. God still trusts you. No matter what kind of mistakes you have made, don't beat yourself over the head thinking it's over. I'm never going to be able to do this. My life is over. I'm not good enough. My coat is removed. I'm not seen. It's like I'm walking invisible. Oh no, you're not walking invisible. You are being seen by the Father. The Lord is with you. Do you remember the speech of Ronald Reagan that was given on June 12, 1987. And maybe you do, and maybe you don't, but I'm going to close with that particular story. 1987 was a very pivotal year in what was taking place between Eastern and Western Germany and the fall of communism, and the significance of what the Berlin Wall and the fall of the Berlin Wall signified for the rest of the former communist countries. Basically, President Ronald Reagan came to Germany, and he was giving a speech asking Mikhail Gorbachev, who was the president of Russia at that time, and he said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. I mean, that is probably the most famous speech that will go down in the history of the world. If you ever remember it, you can see it on YouTube if you haven't seen it. 2 years ago, when I first started writing this book, I met one of the men who actually served with President Ronald Reagan, and it was his guard at that Berlin Wall speech. And so I had an opportunity to talk to someone who was on the other side of the wall, observing the faces of the people that were wanting to be set free on the other side of the wall. And he was standing behind President Reagan, and he was watching the president's compassion and passion for the people, because that was not a prepared speech. It was a speech that he actually, out of the need of what he saw, he said it in front of public TV. And it was aired around the world, which drew a lot of criticism against the president at that time. And they were told, you know, this is never going to bring any type of fruit. It was the wrong speech. Mikhail Gorbachev is never going to surrender his power to any of this. Well, little did they know that a little girl like me was watching on the other side of that wall. I was not in Germany, but we were a part of basically the eastern part of that world. And we were in the closed arena of that world, where a very small amount of news would come through. You barely knew what was happening. Every single day we thought America was going to come and bomb us at any moment because they hated us. That was the propaganda that we believed, and that Russia was the only one that could possibly save us. And so I am sitting there, and all of a sudden, this man shows up on the screen, and they're only airing a couple of his sentences, and underneath it, it just comes with the written Bulgarian. And I'm reading, and I'm telling my parents, as an 11-year-old kid, wow, there is something different in this person's eyes. It's like he actually cares for us. And I was so moved by the president's speech that I looked at Mikhail Gorbachev, and I thought, those people that are saying that they care for us, they look like they're full of hatred. And that man that they're saying that doesn't care for us looks like he's full of compassion for us. And I was sharing that to the man that was guarding him. And he said, you cannot believe just the part of how God is the only one that can orchestrate all these years later for me to be here, to be meeting a man who actually served President Reagan, and for him to tell me the backstory of what actually had happened that day. And he said, President Reagan was so committed to doing something for Eastern Europe that he was never going to stop. He felt like that was his main reason why he was the president at that particular time in history. And I remember just a few years later, 1989, guess what happened? The wall in Berlin fell down. And all of a sudden, the wall in Romania fell down, and the wall in Bulgaria fell down. And it was like this effect just sweeping through the entire European area. And all of these dictators, we had a dictator for 45 years, coming and saying, I am resigning, I am removing myself out of this position. And all of a sudden, on the streets, there is chaos, and there is people screaming and yelling and destroying all of the statues and museums that the communists built, and everybody is like, freedom, freedom, no more communism. Now, I am telling you that story because for me, that was the beginning of the opening of how we heard the gospel. That somebody that was from a political party had to come and stand in the gap, literally between the living and the dead, and say, I don't care if my entire party rejects me. I am standing against the voice of this dictator, and I will command them to calm down and to set their people free. When God gives you a dream and a vision, it has to be greater than just you looking cute and walking around and saying, wow, am I not anointed? No, it has to be bigger so that you say, I am willing to die for the lives of these people, and I don't care how many devils in hell are going to have to bow before the name of Jesus. That when you have a dream and you're passionate about it, all of a sudden God comes and he says, I don't see your face. I don't see your age. I don't see your inabilities. I see your willingness. I see your willingness to stand and not give up, to persevere when it gets hard, to not complain when everybody leaves you, but to say, thank you, Jesus, for my invisible mentors, for they have developed my character to stand and not take the glory when it finally comes. That's why Joseph was able to stand before the brothers that hated him and have compassion and empathy. Because compassion and empathy in our life is not developed by just looking cute in the mirror every day. It's not developed by just reading and hearing a good sermon. It's developed by walking out this journey, getting up every day and saying, though everything may fall apart, I will serve the Lord. Though everything else may look like gloom, doom and gloom, I will serve the Lord. That is the dream that God is wanting to ignite inside of you. To be people that are world changers. You may never be a president, but you may be. You never know. You may be raising the next president of the United States. You don't know who you're sitting next to right now that God is saying, I am going to put them in key positions. We have to begin to recognize each other and to encourage each other, to stand with each other and to say, we're in this together. We're going forward. We're moving forward. For me, that speech was something that all these years later, I'm going to hold dear to my heart because it's the beginning of how I came to know Christ. Christ came to Bulgaria because the fall of communism happened. All these missionaries started coming in. I heard the gospel for the first time in my life, never celebrated Christmas. And I said, one day I'm going to be a minister that goes and ministers to presidents. And everybody laughed. And they all said, yeah, right, like it's going to happen. Well, guess what? May 16, 2012, I hosted the first Bulgarian president who was evangelist, who was evangelical Christian, and who was the first democratic president of Bulgaria. He was coming to meet with President Obama and with Bill Gates. And I heard about it through a friend of mine who works for the government. And she said, your president who just got elected is coming to America. Would you like to meet him? And I said, no, I don't want to meet him. He needs to know me as a friend because I have a dream of how we're going to turn Bulgaria around. And I need him to be a part of my team. And she looks at me like, Sadie, that's not how politics works. And I said, no, I know. But I know about Esther. And Esther knew how to throw a party and ask for a request from the king. So what we're going to do is we're going to throw a party in Seattle, Washington. And he's going to come to our party. And guess what? He canceled all of his meetings and he came to our party with 200 people from his delegation and 30 journalists and 400 other people that were from the area government, governors, senators. So I thought I was throwing a party for just a few people. It was about 500 or 600 people at that party. And I was given a clearance to be with the president for the entire day, to go meet with Bill Gates and to go and be a part of all of his travels and meetings. And now this year he changed power and another person became a president. But now he's working with our team, with our legal team of people, trying to bring and change the educational system, trying to change and help us with the law policies so that we can secure something for these kids so that they're no longer trafficked. You see, one little dream like this that everybody is making fun of, I don't care how long it takes, it is going to come to pass. So when he met me, he looks at me and he says, wow, I feel like I want to hire you to work for me. And I said, no, I'm not for hire because I won't be able to fulfill my calling if I worked for you. But I can do it if we're just working together, me as a nonprofit and you as a president. And so that's how it happened. We actually had a relationship with him established out of just a whole bunch of asks and knocks on the door that I never give up on when I say, no, this is something that God's given me. But see, it comes from just sometimes one spark, one speech, one person coming in, igniting a fire inside of you, and you saying, that's me, I'm going to be just like that because I'm going to stand also in the gap for nations between the living and the dead. Amen. I want you to stand up with me today because I want to pray for you as people who are here, 11th anniversary, just the beginning of many amazing things, seeing dreams and visions coming to pass. And I want to ask you today, now that we gained a whole hour, it's only 12:15, we're doing good. I want to ask you today, you came, and first of all, you've never given your life to the Lord, and maybe somebody just brought you here today and you're like, wow, I don't even know who that Jesus is. Well, guess what? I didn't either. All these years ago, He walked into my life and I said, I'll believe in you if you heal me. And just as I was thinking that, the pain in my stomach left and I ran up there with 500 other people and I gave my life to the Lord. That was the very first day of the beginning of my journey. And I was the first Christian in my family to come back and to testify of who God is. You know, sometimes you can be the trailblazer. And other times you walk in the steps of somebody else. But today, if you've never accepted Jesus in your heart, no longer play church. Just say, I want the real thing. Because Jesus is the real thing. I've been in witchcraft. It didn't work. I've worshipped other stuff. They didn't work. But Jesus is the only one who came to us that doesn't require us to go to Him. He comes and looks for us.